This is Comics Therapy, Episode 6. No reviews, just analysis. Today, we'll be discussing three books from August 28, 2013. The Massive No. 15, Young Avengers No. 9, and Mind Management No. 14. So if you haven't read them yet, consider yourself warned. We are going to spoil them. During grief counseling, we'll talk about Volume 3 of The Walking Dead. This is containing issues 13 through 18. And that hardly counts as a spoiler at this point, but be aware we're going to get into what happens with it.
My name is Cameron Wozko on Twitter, and my confession is I hate wearing geeky shirts due to the types of people who try to start conversations with me.
Welcome to Comics Therapy. By now you know that neither Aaron nor I is a licensed psychotherapist. We'll be talking about some soul-crushingly depressing endings today. But we'll do our best to help us all get through it together. Please don't take any of the following banter as serious advice. If your relationship or the world is ending tomorrow, you should probably seek professional help.
In between segments, as always, we bring you nerd confessions. Are you itching to get a deep, dark, geeky secret off your chest? Like, you'd probably watch My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, even if your son wasn't into it? Then leave us a message. And we'll feature it in an upcoming episode of the show. All the details are on the website, comicstherapy.com. And remember, catharsis is cool.
If you're looking for us outside of the show, Aaron can always be found on Twitter at Aaron Myers. And I'm usually at Andrea Schock.
And, of course, the show's account is at Comics Therapy. So, Andrea, how was your week?
My week was pretty solid. This is our last full week in the old house, so of course I haven't done anything whatsoever to get us ready to move next week. Not a damn thing.
Can I bring up a concern?
Yes.
What are you going to do with your comics?
Right. Okay. So here is the thing. I don't have a plan. As many people know, I'm notoriously bad about storing my comics, and despite the fact that last summer when we moved across the country, I lost a large portion of my collection due to damage that was not my fault. It was the fault of the moving company, I swear. I really haven't thought about that actually much.
I think about it all the time. It's making me lose sleep.
I want to
mount a rescue mission on your house and like take your comics away from you. I need to,
like an intervention.
More like Child Protective Services.
Right. So yeah, like an intervention, but on behalf of the comics, not for me.
Yes. In as an agent of comicdom, I'm enacting my authority to come into your house and seize your comics because you are a bad parent to them, a bad steward of your comics.
I am. I'm a terrible person. But I don't know what to do about this quickly. And I think that's sort of the problem. I should point out that I am moving less than 5 minutes away. So I guess in my heart of hearts, I felt like maybe I could just put them in a box loosely and put them in my car and drive them over myself.
No.
Why not?
Just get some long boxes.
Get some long boxes and get some bags and get some boards. And then in the midst of all of the things that I legitimately have to do to get us ready to move, I'm going to sit on the floor and organize my comics.
Well, okay.
Is not going to fly.
In a perfect world, yes. But how about let's take baby steps instead of just throwing them. So wait, if I'm understanding you, the options are either throw them in a box in the back of your pickup and drive them across town to the other farm.
No, not in a pickup, in my Scion. Like, I'll drive them over myself.
Yeah, that's a San Francisco pickup. And, or put them in a box, a long box, which they're meant to be stored in, but you can't do that unless they're all sorted and bagged and bored. It's kind of like all or nothing.
Well, I don't know. Can I just put them in a long box without bags and boards?
Yeah, it's better than what you're proposing.
How is a specific, wildly overpriced box different than a maybe more substantial box that I pick up from Home Depot or recycle from last summer when I moved.
Because in the heart of every comic book, it wants to be in a short box or a long box. Actually, they all want to be in top loaders, but you know, we can't.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh my God. This is our last.
We should probably just stop the show right now.
Yeah, this is too much for me. This is already like, this is like my grief counseling.
Face your fears.
Not my fears. It's fears for all comic book kind.
I'm sorry. I'm a terrible person. I really am. I own that though. It is my burden that I carry, that I just can't be trusted with comics. Clearly, I'm not responsible enough to maintain this absolutely non-valuable collection. Here is my point. The most, the largest percentage of comics that I own that are bagged and boarded, guess what they are?
West Coast Avengers.
Nope. It's not about sentimentality here. Mm. It's about when they were purchased and like what the mentality of the industry and the buyers were at that point.
Oh, well, that's like all like Image stuff from like the mid-90s.
It is a little bit. I mean, that's, I guess, the saving grace. But, I mean, how about the first 100 issues of X-Force?
Oh, sure. Well, the first one's a collector's edition.
Yeah, it is. And that's possible. I've got about 3 or 4 of those lying around. Mm-hmm. Just in case anybody wants one, let me know. If you haven't found it in your 50-cent bin at your local shop, I got them.
You might have paid too much if you found it in your 50-cent bin.
Hey, shut up. Cannonball rules.
Well, I don't know. I mean, consider it a test of our friendship that you just go to a comic book store and get a... I mean, how many do you actually have in print that you need to put in boxes? Like 2 long boxes?
I don't know. I lost... I lost about a third of what I had. And that was like 4 book boxes worth. And book boxes are about the size of short boxes. So mm-hmm. I don't know. Do the math.
Yeah. You probably got 2, maybe 3 long boxes then.
Yeah. I mean, it's nothing like the Myers household. It's cool.
Right. Yeah. That's like $10. I just, I find this unacceptable.
Okay. Well, I'll work on that
mm-hmm.
and report back to you next week.
Okay.
And I think it's safe to say that my comics are going to be just fine on the journey from point A to point B. So don't fret your pretty little head over it.
I just have to put it out of my mind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what else? Anything else to report besides your wanton abuse of your comics collection?
Avi started 3rd grade.
Mm-hmm.
3rd grade's pretty nifty. All the cool kids love it. Avi's a cool kid, therefore he loves it. End of discussion.
Bingo bango.
Yeah, that's about it. What about you?
We've been watching a lot of classic cartoons in the house here. It's an education for Luke.
What is a classic cartoon in your book?
There are many levels of classic cartoon. At this point, it's my childhood or like mid-childhood and Chrissy's. So we've been watching Animaniacs and Tiny Toons.
Yes. That I completely approve.
Yeah, they're pretty smart.
They are. I wonder, though, if they're more for you than for Luke.
Yes, but that's how it always was, too. Like... you know, so much of the humor is like for adults, but they're singing and dancing and antics. And that's what makes it a really good kids cartoon, I think.
That's true. I remember seeing a repeat of Tiny Toons when they did the parody of Les Mis.
Mm-hmm.
And it was much later after I was familiar with the musical and I could really appreciate it. And it was amazing and hilarious. But you're right. I had thought it was kind of fun when I saw it the first time. I just didn't appreciate the context. So, okay, I'll give you that.
Yeah, so it's good for everyone, as opposed to, like, Curious George, which we've watched, like, every episode, like, 100 times, and I...
That's the worst.
But it's good for kids. It's just not good for parents.
No. I have never been a Curious George fan. Not so much with Berenstain Bears or Clifford or any of those.
Yep. So yeah. We're trying to find alternatives that don't drive us crazy and still are entertaining for Luke and not just brain candy too.
Nice.
So, you know, it's a hard tightrope to walk, but we're figuring it out.
How much is he allowed to watch at a time?
That depends on how much we want to be parents.
Oh, I'm familiar with that debate.
Yes. I mean, how much is he? Will we prefer he watch? Probably not a whole lot, but that means we'd be engaging him and taking time to be parents and nurture, you know, a young mind. And there's only so much energy you have, you know.
Right.
But do you put
a limit on how much at a time?
Oh yeah, it's never more than like two.
Okay.
So it's usually in the morning when we're trying to just do something and not have a three-year-old who somehow is able to stop everything from getting done somehow. And so,
yeah, they have such a beautiful talent for that, don't they?
He is a master of it. So the TV is – and that is only maybe a 25% chance of reducing his, you know, ability to do that. But it's still dice I'm willing to roll. So, yeah, I mean, we try not to make a TV household. We don't have cable or anything like that.
Does he go to school?
No, he just turned three. So we're on the cusp, I think, within like 6 months, but especially come fall, get deep into fall, we're going to go into a morning program or something because we need a break and it'll be, you know, Oregon here. So it's not so much outside time.
Right. No, I was just thinking that with two little ones, the start of the school year isn't, I mean, I know.
Not yet. Not yet. Not for us.
Right. And Yvonne is moved out, right?
She will be moving out next week or the week after, as soon as she gets a move-in date.
Awesome. Yeah. That's exciting.
That will reduce our house chaos by, you know, 33%.
That means you can accommodate more.
That's right. Sure. Time to have another.
Mm.
No. So no. That's been, so I guess cartoons have been a lot of my week. Not really.
just the good stuff.
That's the good stuff. Boring stuff is work and finances. But started this week writing the honor roll column for Comicosity. So that's been fun.
That's excellent. I know some people who contributed to that column this week, as a matter of fact.
I know, some people don't really understand the rules, though, and send me a whole bunch of emails instead of one email with all the information.
Who would do that? Somebody who is pretty awful as a friend, I think.
Well, somebody who's, you know, it's the kind of same kind of person that doesn't bag and board their comics.
You got to just find those people and just shut them out of your life.
Yeah. Well, I swear when I read like Dante's Inferno, and it was a long time ago, but one of the circles of hell are for people who don't bag and board their comics.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. Pretty. That's the fun part. That's the party all the time circle.
Sure.
People can just read there unencumbered with rules and fucking bags and boards getting in the way. You just grab the comics off the shelf in that particular circle of hell and just read for the joy of it.
Yeah, but the irony is somebody ripped out one of the pages and, you know, the climax is missing and the cover's torn.
You say. Or they're only from the early 90s. That's it.
Yes.
That's all. It's all just Marvel comics from the early 90s.
It's just the Superman run from the early 90s.
I didn't read that.
Well, now you get to. Congratulations. Welcome to hell.
Shut up. Let's talk about some comics.
Okay, that sounds good. But before we get to that, we have a special message from Jason Sachs. He's one of the founders of Comics Bulletin. And if you don't know Comics Bulletin, you should check that website out. It's a great comic site. They do just some of the best in-depth analysis you'll find about comics and pop culture on the internet. So anyway, he's got a Kickstarter going on right now that really needs a lot of help, and it's an amazing project. So listen to this message from Jason. He's going to tell you about the project and where to check it out and how you can help out with it.
Hey there, I'm Jason Sachs. Aaron and Andrea Aspinet come online and tell you a little bit about a Kickstarter project that I'm project managing. I'm running the Saber, the Early Future Year Kickstarter project, which is created by comics legends Don McGregor and Trevor Von Eden. We would really appreciate you stopping by our Kickstarter page and taking a look at the project. We think it's really exciting. A great return to form from a couple of amazing comics creators. Don McGregor, of course, wrote Black Panther, Killraven, Nathaniel Dusk, Lady Rawhide, and a zillion other titles in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. He is a very unique, amazingly insightful comics writer, and he's been joined by Trevor Von Eden, who's another great comics legend. He worked on Batman, Green Arrow, and in a wonderfully unknown book called Thriller that came out in the early 80s. These two people are doing the best work of their entire careers on Saber, and in order for us to see that work, we need to get ourselves funded on Kickstarter. So we'd really appreciate you coming by, taking a look at the project, and hopefully donating a few dollars to it. If you don't, you know, let us know why. Leave us a comment, because we are really curious about why you might not want to contribute, but I think you should. And we'd love to have you join this project. Thanks very much. Bye.
All right. Our first book this week is The Massive, number 15. It's published by Dark Horse Comics. The Massive is written by Brian Wood with art by Gary Brown, and it's colored by Jordi Belair. Tell me about it, Andrea.
Okay, well, contrary to what some people think, The Massive is not about a spaceship or aliens. It is set on Earth in the nearest future after the crash, a series of unprecedented and unpredictable environmental disasters that killed countless people and changed the face of the planet forever. Most of the action centers around Callum Israel, founder of the Ninth Wave, a direct action, nonviolent environmentalist group that's trying to find its way in this new world. They're also trying to find their sister ship. They're based in the ocean, and they're trying to find their sister ship, the Massive, which has been missing for months. Joining Cal are various and sundry companions from his past life as a mercenary and his partner, Mary, whose origins are unknown. And that's kind of the basic place where we meet everybody and see what has happened in the world now and where Cal is in his own life within this world. And some pretty crazy shit just went down in number 15.
Before we get to that, I have a question, because I've been reading this in issues, and you just read the trades and got caught up, right?
Yeah, I read the first trade as a trade, and then I read the subsequent issues as issues. And I just wanted to make that distinction because there is a difference in, like, I have the physical trade sitting on a bookshelf. There's a major difference in the way that the story flows in even between the trade and then just like issue after issue, reading it in chunks. So it's not a bad distinction. I just wanted to point out that, yeah, you're right. I haven't been reading it monthly, but I did read the first trade and then I read the rest of it in the individual issues, and I read it digitally.
The one thing I was wondering is, does like the first trade have like the zero issue in it, where it's sort of like
I read that digitally.
Okay,
the back information about the individuals.
Yes,
and their relationship with the ocean specifically.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, because that, I think, especially in light of this last issue, is very important for people to read if you're reading this book.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Because
I find it fascinating in terms of an approach to the end of the world. I mean, because let's be honest, that's essentially what we're discussing here. Everything is different. Entire world or country systems have broken down, and many people have died. But it's not. It doesn't feel to me the same way that a lot of other, I don't like dystopian fiction. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. And so I don't feel like this is in that same category. And I've been trying for a while to come up with a way to articulate to me why it's different. And I think that a lot of it has to do with the science. I mean, it is very well researched, and it feels very rooted in reality, a mm-hmm. dangerous reality that is very upsetting to think about the scale of the disasters that have occurred. But it is unfortunately something that I think that we can relate to in terms of like some of the worst case scenarios for the planet.
Yes.
I do think that there's another layer here, and that's very clear that we'll get to in a little bit with what happened in this most recent issue. And that's why I made the comparison to kind of magical realism for the honor roll, as a matter of fact, because there is that layer there of clearly beyond reality that some of the characters have experienced something kind of mystical or magical or whatever. But there is a core amount of science and kind of reality that roots this story. And I think that's one of the reasons why I find it so appealing, and it doesn't break my general rule of running away from post-apocalyptic stories.
Yes. And here's, you know, I think this is maybe, let me throw something out that maybe this doesn't feel like a dystopian, like end of the world story, because it's not really an end of the world story. It's an end of human society story. And I think that's an important distinction to make in light of this last issue, that it's not the world that's ending. It's maybe humanity that's ending.
But ordinarily, I mean, sure. I feel like a little bit that's semantics, because ordinarily that's what I find so depressing.
So to go into the specifics of this last issue, you know, the nuclear submarine that was stolen or hijacked or whatever fires off its nuclear missiles. They're about to crash into Earth. It's going to be total nuclear Armageddon. The Earth is going to die, and not just people, everything, the Earth will die.
Right.
And the missiles disappear.
Right.
And
hence the mystical, magical,
there's some very
non-real part.
But there's some very specific wording in it that the ocean itself seemed to swallow them.
Swallowed them up.
Yeah.
Right.
That I think that's very important in what Wood's saying in this. That, and that's why it's not, I don't think it's magical or mystical. It's natural. This is it's a natural occurrence that maybe Mary is this avatar of Mother Earth in that way. And mm-hmm. and the whole, what does he call it? Not the event, but the, whatever they call it, the break, or, you know, when everything seemed to happen.
Crash.
The crash, yes. So when the crash happens and everything seems to kind of happen at once, now I kind of feel with this issue, it's like it's very deliberate, and it was the breaking point for Earth, that Earth could no longer sustain people, and now it's time to reset.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there is, that was my sense all along, because of the really strong emphasis on the ocean within the larger planet's system, especially in all of the individual stories.
Mm-hmm.
And this repeating theme of some things ending, but others being allowed to continue because it's not yet their time to end.
Mm-hmm.
Mary says that several times, and continues to put herself in situations that are just clearly not safe and not really survivable, and yet she escapes relatively unscathed.
Yes.
And so she, to me, has always embodied something kind of beyond human, and at the very least represents a deeper connection to the Earth or Mother Earth or Gaia or whatever name you want to put on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think her confidence is another part about the larger story that I kind of transcends my end of the world like fears, right? Because Mary seems very much in control, and yet not...
not omnipotent or like supernaturally powerful, but
exactly
not fazed by the events that are happening.
Right. And I think I told you, and I wrote about this for Honor Roll, the scene in the fifth issue when they are basically executed by the is it the Russians who find them at the base?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what she is saying to her crewmate, just to trust, you have to be brave enough to die and trust that I will bring you back. Holy shit. Like that really stung me. And I have thought about that repeatedly. And I think that's the confidence that I'm talking about that Mary has as a character that means the rest of this world ending stuff that's happening. Like there's a hope there
mm-hmm.
that her confidence brings to the table. So you're right. It's the end of the human society
mm-hmm.
And the human control. And we don't really know who or what force is kind of moving into control, if anything. It doesn't have to be like a physical manifestation of control, but I feel reassured by Mary's presence that the planet will survive, even if individuals on the planet do not.
Yes, and that there's a very important role that the crew and Callum especially play in this, and that you know, the Massive is the ghost that they chase to where and to why. Because
mm-hmm.
it's this unobtainable thing on the horizon. It's very symbolic of, I think, the struggle. You know, this end times and these people that are pledged to, you know, nonviolence in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also kind of fitting, too, that the nonviolence is very important. And I think it's very important to Mary because of, you know, what happens when there's going to be another a man-made cataclysm or, mm-hmm. you know, or when they're truly threatened, how she goes into action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that how force is applied and how the taking of life and those ideals being kept regardless of what society you live in are really interesting kind of commentaries.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's a ton of layers going on in this book and it's really, you know, there's a lot you could think about, I think. I mean, that was a terrible sentence, but you know what I mean?
No, I agree. It is, I read a lot, nowhere near as much as you do, of course, but I find myself overlapping stories or elements of stories when I'm just kind of mulling them over, if I'm driving or working in the kitchen or whatever, I just think about bits and pieces of the books that I'm reading right now. And this one is always separate because I feel like it is very well crafted and so different from so many other things that I'm reading of any type. Honestly, not just like beyond comics. And a part of it is because it's posing a question about the future in a way that I find less threatening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's always about me, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I do. It is, despite the fact that according to the crash timeline, the entire Bay Area is just gone. So, mm-hmm. like, it's cool. I'm dead. Everybody in my family over here on the West Coast is dead. Like, it's cool, but I don't project that onto the story the way that I do with The Walking Dead, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate the way that this story is unfolding. And I really, we say this a lot, but I actually can't stop thinking about this. Like, really, truly, especially going back to that scene in the fifth issue. And I think that intensity has carried on for me throughout the next 10. And I'm I'm really interested in how this resolves.
Yeah,
if
I mean,
it resolves, this is how it will continue to unfold.
This is the halfway point for the story too. So that, you know, mm-hmm. this is a really interesting twist. And then, like, when I first finished the issue, I went like, "What just happened? Why did it just take this turn?" And that's why it's important to kind of mull this book over, because it's not. I don't think it's what's happening is what your what one's reaction will be at first. You know, first read.
Right. I don't feel like it was a Deus Ex Machina kind of moment mm-hmm. with Mary. I think it's both bigger and smaller than that. And so, so it's good stuff.
So I think this will be, I think, something we can revisit when it's done and see, you know, compare it to how we felt halfway through.
Right.
But I mean, if anyone hasn't gone and read, like, DMZ is another good example. Like Brian Wood's DMZ is one of my – that was another one of, like, the books that kind of hooked me back into comics when I first started reading again. Really interesting political and social commentary book, you know, kind of expanding on this. Like, his best books are his creator works.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Northlanders, too, which is totally separate, but that's an amazing series. All right, you ready to move on?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
Hey, Comics Therapy, podcast seat filler and hopeful Andrea Shockley's featured collaborator, Keith Silva, with a long simmering nerd confessions plural. First, I back and board my comics obsessively and can't see any other way around it. Second, on Wednesday afternoons about 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I obsessively hit the refresh button on the Twitter account of one Aaron Myers to see what Aaron bought this week, and it always, always makes me smile. And third, the big one, really liked your discussion of Infinity a couple weeks back, and I have to say I do not possess the Aaron Myers conceit when it comes to Marvel and DC superheroes. Actually, since this is a therapy session, I get depressed reading most mainstream comics, because in the back of my mind, I can't get past the fact that nothing can or will change, for these characters, and that just doesn't, it just doesn't allow me to, thoroughly enjoy them. So, a failing on my part, I know. Out-of-continuity stories by a favorite artist or writer, it can be different. I can enjoy those. I do enjoy something like a Batman Year 100 or Batman Year 1 or even a Daredevil story out-of-continuity. But in-continuity ones, I just know it's going to go back to the status quo, whatever. I'm sorry, Aaron. I know this is an extreme disappointment for you. It probably will end our relationship. But nonetheless, Andrea and I have lots of cool non-Marvel and DC books to write about, hopefully, in the future. So take care, guards, and thanks for the great podcast. Bye.
Next up, we've got Young Avengers number 9, written by Kieran Gillen and art by Jamie McKelvey and Mike Norton. And the colors are by Matt Wilson. Also, huge shout out to Clayton Cowles, whose lettering and production on this book has been outstanding. Young Avengers is published by Marvel Comics. Maybe you've heard of them.
So in Young Avengers, Billy loves Teddy. So he brought back Teddy's mom from the dead, except it wasn't Teddy's mom. It was an interdimensional parasite, of course.
Whoops.
And wait, what happened?
Nothing. You brought back an interdimensional parasite.
Oops. That's it? That's your reaction? Wow. Okay. Marvel Boy loves Earth and pop music, so he's hooking up with Kate while they try to take down Teddy's non-mom. There's probably an oops in there also.
Yeah,
I think there is. Loki loves conflict under the auspices of helping get rid of Teddy's mom, or maybe he just loves power. That remains to be seen. And Miss America Chavez just loves kicking Loki's ass, because who doesn't?
She, Miss America Chavez, is probably one of my favorite current, like, new generation Marvel characters.
Yeah, she's pretty great.
I told Yvonne she has to cosplay, or, you know, I guess you don't call it cosplay on Halloween, do you?
You can just say dress up, I think.
I guess so.
Call it.
I was trying to be cool and say, hey, cosplay for Halloween. It just shows I'm an old man.
A little bit.
Yeah. So, well, where do you want to start? Do you want to talk about this series as a whole first, then we can talk about this last issue?
No, it was so sad. We have to talk about how sad it was. Oh, my God, the feelings.
Yeah, it's kind of sad and kind of not.
What are you talking about kind of? It was so sad on multiple levels with multiple people.
I think it's perfect. And I don't know, and it kind of worries me.
What, you got something against Young Love? You think it's perfect when it just ends?
Well, I think it's
terrible.
I think Young Love is meant to end. And that's how, that's part of growing up and becoming emotionally mature. And I think being tied to somebody for too long at a young age is tends to stunt people.
Wait, are we talking about the book or are we talking about me?
Hey, I didn't say anything. I'm just commenting. I'm just commenting on my own life and other people's lives. No, but seriously, I mean, and they're younger. I mean, they're younger than how, I mean, if you want to talk about you, like when you and your spouse, you know, met, they're what, 17?
Yeah, I think that the frame of the book, bouncing from the last round of Young Avengers, it's supposedly they're now 18.
Okay.
I think they have to be 18 because there's a lot of sex, and I think Marvel's not allowed to talk about it unless they're over 18, right?
Yeah, okay. So let's say that, fine. But it's also in continuity-wise, they've been together longer than that, you know,
right,
with, like, Children's Crusade and stuff, which they're definitely not even, like, 17 in that.
Right.
To talk about Billy and Teddy, like, they – you can tell, especially Billy has a lot of growing up to do. You know, he has good intentions, but he's fairly immature and reactionary, and he's not a mature adult. I think,
right.
I think Teddy is even more mature, and what happens in this issue, him making the more mature decision to get separation, to figure out, is what's our relationship actually like? How do we actually feel about each other, and is this healthy? Is really an interesting and insightful storyline. And you don't agree?
And sad. I do agree, but it's also sad.
Yeah, but you know, have you ever had like friends break up that you're sad that they broke up, but you also know that's probably good?
No.
Well, then you need more weird friends. Because I do.
I guess.
I mean, I kind of...
I feel like that is something that I am more familiar with at an earlier stage in my life. I had people like that in college, like in undergrad and after undergrad.
Right, exactly. At the age that should
be. It's a young love phenomenon. And in this case, the fears that Teddy has about, does Billy actually love him and does he actually love Billy, mm-hmm, because of Billy's power to manipulate, like, I get that, and I understand that Teddy has focused on that power as kind of the root of the problem, when in reality, that's a thing that everybody can relate to.
Yeah, I mean, even
you
though
you only
this is...
have what the other person tells you to go on. You can't actually read somebody's mind. You don't truly know that they love you and that your love is like equaled. So I do agree that that has made this story it's an inevitable development in their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But it still bummed me out.
Yeah, but I think
they still had a moment. Holy shit, they had like a series of moments at the end. It was heartbreaking. And then you add Leah into the mix and like, oh, it's impossible not to talk about this. Like I'm living in Tumblr right now, and I don't even tumble.
That's funny. It is very, yes, it's very much that. And also, I think with Leah, like the Leah aspect of it actually made me very happy to have her back,
mm-hmm,
even in this kind of new capacity, because we were kind of talking about this a little bit before the show, that if you haven't read Kieran Gillen's Journey into Mystery run, you're not going to be as tied to Leah as the people that have. And like, mm-hmm, she was a very special character to me in that run, and I got very tied to her and her dying.
You and the rest of Tumblr.
Yeah, well, everyone, because I mean, it's these characters that he's able to write and flesh out so much that you get attached to them. Like they're
well, the banter between Leah and Loki, especially, was like the heart of that run.
Yes,
and he has a little bit about of that with America, but not really, because we don't know much about her history or their history together. So it's just much more confrontational.
Mm-hmm.
There's less.
And she's far more guarded in a different way. Like she's like right. Leah never. Leah as is both a very real character and also a very not real character. If that makes sense. Like she was always felt ethereal because she wasn't actually, like she wasn't fully manifested. She was an aspect of some of Hela.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was, and that's which is also kind of. I don't know if that'll even come into play on this. There's a lot of continuity that also gets kind of weird for me, especially with the end of Journey into Mystery, where I kind of thought old Loki had taken over new Loki's body.
Yeah, that was sort of the point. But
so then why would he, that's the only thing that kind of throws me. It's like, why would he even really care about Leah? Because old Loki doesn't care about anyone.
So I made this connection a couple of days ago, probably on Wednesday when everybody was reading this, right?
Mm-hmm.
That there's a bit of this that kind of reminds me of like Peter, Doc Ock kind of influence.
Okay.
Where there's more than one set of memories or experiences or life lessons here. And even when we see old sweet kid Loki popping up all green spirity a couple of times during Young Avengers, that also reminded me a little bit of, you know, Peter popping up and mm-hmm. talking to Doc Ock. I'm not saying that's exactly the same in any way. I'm just saying that to me, I accepted it more with Loki because it felt like a similar conceit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's obviously some more kid Loki, like sweet Loki, influence happening here. Just the fact that we've seen him as a manifestation of guilt or conscience or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I buy it. I'm fine with that. Yeah. I'm totally fine with that because I sort of like it. So I accept it because I find it rather delightful when they yell at each other about things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's fine. Yeah. It doesn't really bother me. And I think I never really worry about that much with Gillen because he has a tendency to wrap up loose, like these little loose strings too. That might be, people might be wondering. So
he really does. I have a tremendous amount of respect for his, how very long sighted he is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a word, but I'm just going to use it anyway. To have the ramifications of what happened in, issues that were written years ago, kind of mapped out in a very strategic way,
mm-hmm.
With so many other things happening in between. I just think I appreciate that.
Yeah. If anything, I think his writing appeals to the people that will complain, like Hickman is too sterile in his, you know, it's too big in his writing.
Mm-hmm.
That. They're similar writers in that there's very long-term story plans, but Gillen tends to get more in deep with the character creation.
Right, which I hadn't thought about, but you just totally nailed it, why I would respond so emotionally then mm-hmm. to Gillen's stuff, because it's character-driven, because there are so many little moments that he creates. I feel like he missed an opportunity with the soundtrack in this one though. do you know? I know he's all into like pop stuff, and that is great. It fits the glam and the sparkle of this teenage world. Do you know the song "You'll Never Know"? It's an old Torch song. You should look it up.
I will look it up.
I promise you that, like, if you hear that in your head, during the final scene with Billy and Teddy. It will bring you to tears. It's just, it's perfection. So yeah, everybody go meet the internet and look up the song. You'll never know.
Well,
and then read that moment.
You'll make sure to put it into the show notes so people can look it up.
Yes, I will do that. I will absolutely do that.
Wonderful.
And everybody will cry.
But it's great. Okay, there's a ton going on. I love I have no problems with this, and some people seem very, very kind of meh about it, and it boggles my mind. Like, how could you not enjoy this book?
Well, I think that enjoyment is the word that is key. It is lighter. No joke. It is significantly lighter than what we just talked about, than what we're going to talk about, than many other books that are on the shelves today. And I think that if that's not what you're looking for in a reading experience, then I can understand why it would be less appealing. There's so much about being young and experiencing things as a non-master of your domain. The Young Avengers are young first and then Avengers. And sometimes it can be almost disappointing to see like heroes in situations where they're not guaranteed to be successful.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for escapist traditional superhero stories, that's not what I think anybody is attempting to do with this book. So I can understand why it would not have the same wide audience as something that is more in the traditional Marvel vein. But
sure. I would say that's kind of true about any book we're going to talk about, because the books that are interesting aren't
us.
Like that. Yeah.
Plus, you read all the books, so I feel like that's a completely invalid argument.
I don't know. That's not true. People say I read all the books. I hardly read any DC. I just read all the good books.
Right.
So, speaking of good
books. Book yet.
Not yet. We'll get to one of these days, maybe.
Somebody should write in and tell us what DC book we should read. And be nice, because I will be starting mostly from scratch. So if you have a suggestion or a thought about, I've read the first volume of Wonder Woman and the first volume of Animal Man from the New 52, and that's it.
And if you do write in, give us a little pitch on what you think are the reasons it would be a book that would be good for the show.
Yeah, not just another one that Andrea should read it because it's going to freak her out.
Well, that's kind of reason enough for me, but we're not quite there yet. You ready to talk about our next book?
I am.
Let's do it.
Hi, this is from @somethingleah, LEAH. For my nerd confession this week, I have to admit that though I've been to a rooftop viewing of Serenity, one of my friends just went on a themed Lost in Paradise Fifth Element mini cruise, and now I feel like my life is incomplete. I mean, there were glowing drinks. Help me, comics therapy. You're my only hope.
Mind Management number 14, written, drawn, and everythinged by Matt Kind. How do you say his name? Is it long I, short I?
I say Kint.
Okay. What Aaron said. Published by Dark Horse Comics. Aaron, I do feel it's only fair that you get to bring us up to speed on this book because it's kind of your baby. But I am setting the time limit. You have 2 minutes to give us some major mind management plot points. Ready?
Okay.
Go.
All right. So mind management is about the world and everything you thought about the world and it not being true. That's the big thing. It is... I don't know how to do this in 2 minutes. I mean, there's the main plot, but that doesn't even matter because the main plot isn't even the plot and the subplots aren't even the plot. I mean, you know, it's an onion, but now I feel like I'm under pressure and my head's going to explode like I'm being mind managed by somebody.
How about give us a couple of main characters?
We've got Meru, who is the main character, who is discovering the world around her is not the world she thought she lived in, and it is only unfolding more and more with every issue. And you have a...
Who is Mind Management?
Mind Management is a organization that has been controlling the world from the shadows for a long time and has been disbanded, but may be reforming.
And who are Meru's allies?
See, now I have to remember character names, and I...
It's okay, if you can just describe them. You don't have to... It's not a test. I'm judging, but it's not a test.
There is the man who can manipulate you, and they all can manipulate you in different ways. There is a team of people whose loyalties are constantly shifting, and the players...
So Lime is the main kind of leader?
Yes.
Henry Lime?
But to say he's on the team is not true anymore with issue 14.
True.
That's why it's so hard.
Man, now we're talking about multiple teams. Everything is fucked.
It's not though. Okay. So great. So, hey, that's 2 minutes. Let's move on.
It's 2 minutes. We'll get to it.
Yeah. So let me say, a perfect Matt Kent book is a book that you have to read 2 or 3 times. And not because... you have to read it to understand it, more because every time you read it, you're going to read a new book. I think that's the best way to describe his creator-owned writing.
I accept that. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm a little obsessed with him, and this is kind of like his masterwork in that the layers that this story takes and the way it's unfolding are like nothing else that's being written or published. And that's why it's so hard to describe, though, because like issue by issue or even page by page, the story is changing.
Right. And there's story within story within story.
Yeah, and the powers that these people have and how they interact with each other and their fears and their loyalties and the history, you know, that's the big thing, is the history of the characters. Like, you find out more about them with every issue, and that changes how the story is gonna keep unfolding. That sounds so superficial and kind of stupid for me to say it, but it's like the only kind of thing that you can say, and then you read it and then it makes sense.
Right. I mean, well, because in many cases you're talking about characters who are rediscovering for themselves what they're capable of.
Mm-hmm.
It's been kept from them through artificial means. And so their rediscovery happens while we discover it for the first time. And so it's not superficial to point out how much that changes both our perception of the character, but also their place in the world. And in this case, the existing parameters for mind management and for Lime and his relationship with Meru it's over. That continuing path that she had been going on of not knowing really who she was and how she fit in to the larger picture, that has ended. And now it's like a whole new ball game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really does make everything fresh and new with every subsequent issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's completely not predictable.
No. And that's what makes it so exciting too, because I mean, I guess at its core, it's an adventure story. Unlikely hero discovering their potential and uncovering this plot and getting caught up in it and, you know, is being pulled along for the ride. But that's so not what the book is, too. I mean, it is and it isn't. And also just the story itself about, I find the characters fascinating, like the powers that they have, how they were brought into the program, how their powers were exploited, you know, how mm-hmm. they learn to live with them or don't learn to live with them. I mean, that is just so interesting because it's so well done, and his art style is so unique, and it's one of those, you know, there's like maybe a dozen creators I can think of that have a very non-traditional kind of art style that is so engaging and engrossing that you can't help but not be, you know, sucked in by their stories.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and he's kind of at the top of that list for me right now. That
It is very brilliantly put together. I mean, the level of detail down to, and I remember that you said this when I picked up the first trade months ago. You said make sure that you read the stuff along the sides of the pages, like read all of the notes and read all of the notations that
mm-hmm.
you might pass by because it's just small letters on the page. It's not part of the story, but it's so much part of the story.
Even within panels too, there are hidden messages.
Yes, yes. And the ads, the fake ads in the back of the book and on the back cover of the book. And it is so inclusive of this story as to be, I don't know, it's a little jarring because he's like so fully committed to this world building. Kind of makes you think like, shit, maybe there's something else going on here. What does he know that we don't know? Just because it's so well presented.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not that kind of paranoid, guys. I'm not. I'm afraid of other things, not of mind management.
I don't know. You read enough of his books, though. You start to, because they're all very complex and so layered like this. You know, they're not all the same story, but you know, they're all different, but they're all the same kind of level of detail, and that they work your brain so hard while you're reading. But it doesn't feel like a workout. It feels like an experience, a revelation.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think that what's happening with Meru, though, just to get back to the ramifications of this issue specifically, because she had been living and reliving and living and reliving as her memories were taken from her, there was a slower build up to this issue, up to 14.
Mm-hmm.
I think that all that has gone by the wayside now. We're like kind of standing on the edge of a cliff, and I don't know what's on the bottom or what we'll see on the journey to get to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty exciting, actually. The repetition in the first 14 issues, or I'm sorry, first 13 issues, was helpful to me as a reader because of how complex it was.
Yeah.
And because we were learning things as she was learning, and there's this really interesting kind of putting the clues together mystery component that, while I don't think that's the main goal, it is crafted in such a way that you can start to make leaps in logic as the story unfolds. Yet now we've gotten to the point where, like, I don't have a fucking clue what's going to happen. I have no idea. It's like a brave new world for her and what she's capable of. And that's kind of awesome.
Yeah. I cannot say more enough good things about this book. I mean, if anything, if I have every issue, I have doubles of some issues, and I just bought both of the hardback editions from him directly, because if you buy it from him, he'll do sketches inside of the books.
You have original art from him too?
Yeah, I have one page.
Yeah. Is this, I don't mean to put you on the spot with words like favorite, but I feel like this more than anything has come up whenever we talk about books that are really important to you. It's clearly in your top like three. Is it your favorite?
Currently going. I don't know. It's hard for me to say with books because I can't say like this is my favorite book. It's maybe my favorite of a certain type, like genre of comic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because this is not you can't compare it. You can't compare this to like Avengers or something like that.
Right.
But it's definitely one that I will look most forward to. This and like Prophet, like Brandon Graham's Prophet is another one like that. When it comes out, it's like, that's the first one I'm going to read.
Hmm. Cool.
You know, there's a few. There's a few like that. It's hard for me to say one is above the other, but this is definitely one that I'm very tied into. So
yeah, it's a beautiful book, really.
Mm-hmm. And we just got, I had a copy of it because he's going to read Super Spy by him. It's one of his older books, but it's another just great. I don't know. There's nothing I would say that he's done that somebody shouldn't read. And he has a lot of books before this, and he just came out with a new just standalone novel called Red Handed, which is excellent. If you find yourself liking My Management, do yourself the favor and just go out and find used copies of all his old books, because they'll just give you hours and hours of entertainment.
Cool.
Yeah. So you ready to move on?
Yeah.
All right. This is my favorite part. Let's do it.
Hi, this is Nicole again, otherwise known as Fury. This is my second nerd confession, and it is that I have a pair of Batman underwear. The confession isn't really that I have the underwear. The confession is that the bat symbol is pink, sparkly glitter. And I know that there's purists and probably feminists out there, and it's probably totally blasphemous, but I'm a nerd. I like Batman, and damn it, I like glitter. Thanks. Bye.
It didn't take long at all for grief counseling to steal the show and our hearts and our brains. It's a coming-of-age tale where a young girl must conquer her fears with the help of her wise spirit guide. Also, it's about Andrea reading The Walking Dead Volume 3. Let's do it, shall we?
I didn't hate this.
Ooh, that's good.
I didn't like it, but there's a big difference.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's progress.
So, for those of you who are reading the current issues of Walking Dead and you have no idea what happened 100 issues ago, this is the prison. They have gotten to the prison, and this is the first time that I'm starting to get an inkling that maybe Aaron was right, that the monsters that I'm afraid of aren't the monsters I should be afraid of. So this is the first time, really, that the zombies kind of take... I can't believe I'm saying this. They're not the part that we fear, that they kind of take like a step out of the spotlight. The first two volumes, so 12 issues, are so much about exposition, and we are now moving into finding or attempting to find like stability for these poor souls who are living in this just fucking wasteland of death. Mm-hmm. And they have found what they think is going to be their saving grace. A prison, which, holy shit, that is about the opposite of safe.
It's a nice metaphor, though, isn't it?
Oh, my God. It's like hit you over the head with a hammer metaphor.
Have you read that issue? Oh, I mean, sorry.
What?
I was kidding about the hit your head with a hammer issue.
They all have hammers. mm-hmm. Several of them seem to prefer it, even.
Sure.
I'm all about distance when my zombie apocalypse comes. Like, hammer is hand-to-hand combat. That's way too close. Anyway,
comfort.
In the prison, and they clean out... It's so gross. Oh, my God. It's just the worst. They clean out a section or large portion of, like, the outside area and some of the – one of the cell blocks of all of the zombies. And then, of course, they find several inmates who are still there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what's happening. For me, though, like, the first two volumes were about my personal fears, like the fear of literally being ripped limb from limb and like eaten, and my inability to protect my child from that same fear. And I recognize how irrational that is. Okay, so I leave doors and windows in my house open. I have never told anybody this. So get ready, because this is good stuff. I went through a series of years of my life where I was simultaneously petrified by the idea of anything supernatural, yet also driven by the need to learn about it so that I could be prepared. it's stupid. I'm a reasonably bright person, and I understand how stupid it is. I was in, like, middle school and high school. So just to give you that context, it's not like
okay.
I was doing this yesterday.
All right, that's not as bad.
But,
we weren't, like, 22.
No, I was not. I was definitely not. It was way before I learned that it was actually better to just avoid anything that scared me altogether. So anyway, I came upon this theory that the best way to escape from something heebie-jeebie-like was through a door or a window, right? Like, anything creepy that happens down in a basement, you can't get out because you're in a basement. But if I can just get out the door or the window, if that's always open, then it's fine. And like, bad stuff doesn't happen when the doors and windows are open. Now, come with me on this journey, because I recognize that in the real world, that is, surprise, actually the opposite.
Right. You know how the easiest way to let something bad in? To leave your doors or your windows open.
Right. I get that. I really, really do. Except I'm not afraid of, like, serial killers or, like, robbers or whatever. I'm not saying I leave my doors unlocked. I mean, I sometimes do. But I would be much more inclined to cover all of the reflective surfaces in my house at night, because the reflection through the dark window freaks me the fuck out, than to, like, run to the front door and make sure that I locked it so that some actual living person couldn't break in. That is a fact.
That is crazy cakes.
It's super crazy cakes. I know that. This is all just my own personal exposition to get to the point where I was not as afraid of the monsters, like the human monsters, in this story. Mm-hmm. As soon as the little girls get killed by, like, the crazy inmate, yep, I knew exactly what had happened, and I knew exactly who it was. He wasn't a tax evader. Give me a break. And so that was, like, comforting in a way. Mm-hmm. And this was the first time where the deaths were caused by people, not by zombies, mm-hmm, including the failed suicides, including the, like, when Rick flips out. I mean, this was all, who was it who said, oh, it was Roderick the other day, said that this is the book where it goes, they all go Lord of the Flies. And it's so true that this is the first time that they have the safety net to attempt to live, quote unquote, normally. And it's so clear that they're not capable of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of them, not because of the zombies.
Yeah.
So it's really, all of that was just getting to the point where I didn't like it, because I don't like the story yet, but I didn't hate you while I was reading this, because I didn't hate this.
I think they call, this is like the first stage of, what's the, like associating with your captor, you know, like, what's
that? I'm not going to tell you what that is, because I kind of refuse to have that applied to me. Are you serious?
I'm just saying, maybe this is all part of a bigger plot.
Oh my God.
And in the end, you're going to be coming to Walking Dead Con with me. We'll be doing zombie runs together.
Absolutely not.
I don't know. We'll see. We still got 14 more weeks.
So the other thing about this, oh my God, are you serious?
I think so. Aren't there 17 volumes?
I hate you again. Wow. Okay, so the other thing that I have to say about this particular volume that was a point in its favor is this is also the first time that we learn that anybody who dies is turning into a zombie. It's not just when they get bitten by a zombie.
Yes.
So there was, like, a little bit of, like, hey, science, that I thought was kind of nifty, because that tells me more about the origin and, like, the world building, as it were, or world crumbling, as it actually is. That is interesting. I assume that this is not going to ever turn into like, let's cure the virus or whatever it is that we all inherently have in ourselves that is causing us to rise from the dead, blah, blah, blah. I don't think that's where we're going, but it did answer a question, kind of. It answered a question with a question about, like, what the fuck the origin of the zombieism is.
And to me, too, it's as soon as you find that out, it was the title of the book takes it on a much different meaning, that everyone who's alive is the Walking Dead.
Oh, hey. Yeah. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Ah, I see what you did there.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I thought, I mean, so, but I think that's intentional.
I still don't, I'm sure it is. They're very smart. Yes, they were. I still don't, though, really find myself caring much about any of these characters. And I think, just to make a comparison back to The Massive, which is also dealing with societal collapse, but on a different scale and with different resources and different threats, I don't like many of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so it is only about projecting my own fear onto the story. It's not at all about any sort of care or compassion for the individual characters yet. Maybe that will change. In some cases, I liked them and now I don't. And so I think it would be surprising and interesting if it goes in reverse.
Hmm. Yeah, I think this is the beginning of a lot of character development, and how that's going to feel for you will be, I think I'm interested to see what you think over the next, you know, especially next couple of volumes.
But the zombies aren't going anywhere. So, like, that's still the worst.
Are they? Aren't they? You don't know. Well, we'll see.
Oh, God. Why don't they go someplace cold? Or an island?
These are all great questions.
I don't know. I just couldn't stop myself from thinking, you set up shop in a prison, and the only thing protecting you from the things that will eat you are walls and chain link fences. I don't think that's enough.
I don't know. I guess we'll find out, won't we?
God, it's like interminable.
This is the long, grueling grind.
It is. It really is.
And we're dragging everyone along with us.
They seem to be enjoying it, though. So thanks, people.
Mm-hmm.
Don't
start enjoying it too much, though, because I think they thrive on your misery. I mean, at least I do. If you start liking this a lot, I don't know how I'm going to feel.
I just, for the record, I don't like it at all. Nothing about this is appealing. I didn't hate this one only because it did not give me nightmares yet.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So, there you go.
That's fine. I'll trade you on that. I'll do that trade with you. As long as you still hate me and it.
Everything you stand for, as always.
Yes, then you can sleep at night. just don't do it with the windows open or the doors.
Is it that weird? Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. I shouldn't have even asked that because I know how just stupid it is.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
All right, let's wrap this one up. What do you say?
Yeah.
Hey guys, it's Sam, and my nerd confession is that I was potty trained in a day when I was a baby. I don't know however old I was, but I really wanted these Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle underwear, and my mom said, if you want them, you can't shit in your pants anymore, and I did not shit in my pants anymore, and I got the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle underwear, and I do not have it anymore, but... Yeah, that is pretty awesome, I think. Right, thanks.
Well, you know what? Another one bites the dust. Everything you wanted to know about us or the show, it's at comicstherapy.com. That's including show notes, details on recording your nerd confessions, contacting us, and subscribing to the show. You know what? Soon there might even be t-shirts. You guys want t-shirts?
Aaron, think about our demographic. Who doesn't want t-shirts?
That's true.
Thanks for listening to Comics Therapy, kids.
Thanks, everyone. See you next week.
Let's go! He walks merrily down the street with the green pool way down low. Ain't no sound but the sound of his feet. Machine guns ready to go. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat? Out of the doorway, the bullets rip. To the sound of the beat, yeah.